Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And I am joined by the number one New York Times best-selling author, Lisa Gardner, who is back with, this is the fourth installment now of her Frankie Elkin series that we've had her on to talk about the last few years. This one is called Kiss Her Goodbye. It's available everywhere. And Lisa, as we jump into this story, it takes Frankie, well, you take us and Frankie to Tucson. And so my first question as I think about Frankie now that she's four installments in, how important is the name of this character to make her so successful? I know she's got a great story, but that seems to be such a perfect name for her. Does that just kind of happen by sheer happenstance?
You know, it's really funny when you go to name a major character, and I just love the name Frankie. I wanted something a little harder edge to it, but also, I don't know, kind of spunky, so I feel like I'm doing Frankie a disservice saying that. But I feel like she lives up to her name, and it's just been a great ride to be working on a character that is an everyday person who works cold cases and is much like us, like what you were trying to solve, find someone who'd been missing for 5 years or 3 months or whatever. What would you do? And that is very much brings us to Frankie Elkin.
And she's not trained for this. However, she's got real life experience. And I wouldn't call her an amateur, but, you know, I think she's an amateur in the fact that she doesn't work in law enforcement. But her instincts are what drives her, and her experience are what drives her. So what really drives the character in your mind to give her this mission?
I think Frankie has a couple superpowers that are very relevant and very timely for this day and age. And one is, she's an excellent listener. I mean, she is a nomad. She is a recovering alcoholic. Life works best for her if she keeps moving. So she goes from town to town. She's learning entirely new situations, cultures, families, and she can do that because she doesn't have prejudice and she's a great listener. She talks to the families of the missing people. She talks to neighbors and loved ones and really pays attention to the answers. And that adaptability, that ability to really engage in the conversation she's having, and the fact that as someone who's made a lot of dubious life choices herself, she doesn't judge. She spent her own time on the fringes of society. She was literally drunk and passed out in gutters, and most of her interaction with law enforcement, she was on the other side of the bars. So she brings a lot of, you know, grace and forgiveness and empathy to her job.
This story involves trying to track down a missing Afghan refugee. And, you know, that Afghanistan's been in the news the last 25 years, I guess. But when you go ahead and make that part of your story, what goes into making sure that you capture the essence of that culture correctly for the page?
The research for Kiss Her Goodbye was some of the hardest I've ever done. I'm used to talking to law enforcement and learning a lot about procedure, you know, like, you know, how to do footprints or how to track someone in the wild. And this was really talking to people about their experiences. I've met a couple. They volunteer in real life to help assist with the resettlement of, in particular, Afghan refugees in Tucson. So they helped me meet people involved in the work, but also made contacts with many of the refugee families themselves. And one of the first things that really jumped out at me, this is a book about a family. It is, you know, hard stuff, a family story. And when you start talking about these refugees, it is all about family. The trials, tribulations, the heartbreak they've suffered, the hope they have for the future. That is what's gotten them this far, and that's what they're trying to do, is get a better future for their family. And I left so many of these interviews both inspired and amazed, but also struck again about how much we are all the same across cultural and international lines. Any parent out there wants a better future for their child, and that's what Sabira and her husband Izad in the story are all about.
I would imagine you didn't just close your eyes and do a pin the tail on the donkey and find Tucson. So what is it about Tucson that has some significance for Afghan culture?
It is a major international city in ways we don't think about because it has a huge air base. So it is quite the melting pot of cultures, of cuisine. It's actually a gastronomic city. So if you are a refugee, you don't get to pick the city. You go go to, it is given to you. But Tucson is not a bad place to land because there is a rich Afghan culture there. There's some amazing Afghan restaurants. I got to eat Afghan food for the first time, and I'm now officially hooked. Like, that's comfort food. Like dumplings and things, I honestly had no idea. And I have to say, it's no hardship when you're researching a book and, gee, you have to go, you know, eat out again at another great Afghan restaurant.
Did you go into this like I probably would? I think of Afghanistan, I think of deserts and caves, and that's really where it starts and stops. You don't think of the actual communities there, and it seems like a very desolate place. But what did you learn about the Afghanistan and the culture that they bring to the United States that we don't probably get from media?
Well, you know, it's much like the United States. It's a bunch of different ethnic groups, topographies, regions. Of Kabul, you know, the capital city, was actually quite cosmopolitan. You know, I'm interviewing people talking about, you know, working in cubicles while checking Facebook with their cup of coffee they got from the, you know, corner coffee shop. And in a lot of ways, they have even within their country some of the geographic biases we have. You know, when the Taliban started making its surge in Afghanistan, you know, those few years ago, people sitting in Kabul felt safe. It's like sitting in New York City. There might be things going on, you know, out in the countryside, but we're New York City. That won't happen here. And just so many of the conversations, again, just kind of led home about all the ways we're somewhat similar. And, again, the biases we do have against other countries sometimes without realizing, again, all of the things we have in common.
Generally, the titles are left up to the publishers, and you just write without a title, and I know that. Does it work the same way for characters, or do you have control over what your characters are named?
It's always fun to do character names. For writing about an Afghan family, one of the things we tried to do is come up with names that would be more approachable for readers, because, you know, it's hard. So, like, Zara, the 4-year-old girl, I think that's a name most people can look at and get. But it's also fun, too. I do on my website a Kill a Friend, Name a Buddy sweepstakes, where I pick a winner, so it's a real name, who gets to die in the book. Names come from a lot of sources, let's put it that way.
And I've read plenty of books that have foreign names, and in my mind, I always assign a common name to them just to keep them straight in my mind. And so do you have that? I think that's just how my brain works, but do you have that experience with maybe as a writer or even talking to readers that they do the same thing?
Well, you know, it's gotten so interesting now because of the rise of audiobooks. So I hadn't even thought of it. We've figured out names. I was calling my main character, the missing mother, Sabara is what I, looking at the name, is what I thought. When we went to record the audiobook, of course they needed to know how it was actually pronounced. So I went back to one of the experts that was helping me with the Dari, and he actually recorded the name as an audio clip, and it's like, Sabara. And it's like, oh, I don't have that right at all. And it was fun talking to readers, because they talk about now in book club, the people who read the book will have one way of, these are the characters, and people who listen to an audio book are like, no, I don't actually know who you're talking about at all. This is the character. This is how I know them. So you do have to cover all bases now.
Is that frustrating? Is it to the end? The audiobook's the last step here before publication, and so is it frustrating to get to the end and realize, boy, I didn't even think about the pronunciation?
You know, I really thought, shame on me. I mean, there's no reason I should have asked my you know, expert to help me with that sooner. And it was kind of fun. I'm on great terms with the narrator, Hiller Huber, who does the books, and she and I were actually having a great time, and I was so grateful to Kosh, because the poor guy is like, every 30 seconds, I'm like, wait, if we had that name wrong, what about this name? And they're like, oh, yep, we have that one wrong, too. I think we're saying Alia, and it's Alia. And it's like, okay, yep, pretty soon. I'm like, I'm so sorry. Can you just do all the names?
It seems like anymore, I know about half and half, people who read the books, the hardcovers, versus people who listen to audiobooks. Is that kind of your experience with your readers?
Yes. I mean, I think particularly with the birth of podcasts, more and more readers prefer to listen to the book. It's more expedient for their lifestyles. And, you know, as an author, any way you experience the story that works for you is great. You just want as many people as possible to share the story of this family and what are their secrets. And, again, those kind of timeless elements of what really goes on behind closed doors. So that Sabra, under any name, has a lot of secrets.
All right, the book is Kiss Her Goodbye. It's the latest Frankie Elkin novel from the number one New York Times bestselling author, Lisa Gardner. Lisa, another fantastic offering, and it's a pleasure to speak to you again.
Thank you so much, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.